So Narad is the second Acharya in the line of spiritual disciple succession. He is a representative of Brahma, and therefore he is respected exactly like Brahma, the father of all Vidhi's regulations. Similarly, all other successive disciples in the chain are also equally respected as representatives of the original spiritual master. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first canto, fourth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Appearance of Sri Narada. The auspicious arrival of Sri Narada means that whatever confusion and bewilderment that Vyasadeva is feeling by the range of the Lord, as we discussed yesterday, whatever that is, it will be dissipated. Just like when the sun rises, the fog goes away. It is not abnormal to be bewildered in conditional life. That is not a surprise. The surprising thing is to get out of bewilderment. And Narada represents that chance. It's amazing how attached we are to being bewildered. Especially these days, people actually don't want knowledge, and they actually say that. This is the symptom of the mode of ignorance. When up becomes down, down becomes up. They're not even confused about religion and irreligion. They're not confused about what is spiritual and what is material. They have reversed everything. That is the mode of ignorance. Mode of passion means you're bewildered, confused about your understanding. Mode of ignorance means you just take one thing for the other. You take knowledge for bewilderment and bewilderment for knowledge. So these days, as we discussed before, people glorify not knowing. They think that's spiritual. If you're a real spiritualist, then you're satisfied not knowing anything. You know the universe will work out all the details. So what if I don't know the whole picture? I just trust and go with the flow, and things just happen. All you guys who have to have the answers, it's not spiritual. It means you're still hung up with your rational intelligence. You're not using your intuition. You're not using your inner awareness. You Hare Krishnas always try to delineate everything clearly. This is this, that is that. That's not spiritual. That's like organized religion, where everything is laid out very clearly. Now, spiritual is just, you can't define it. You can't talk about it. I mean, and each person has his own whatever it is. Each person has his own whatever. That's spiritual. The spiritual is the mystery, the unexplained, the impossible to explain. They're always changing. You can't really teach it or discuss it. You just kind of meditate on the various hidden secret nuances and meanings and poetic this is and that. All this battle comes from people who do not want to submit. Yet they must submit to material nature. While they're babbling like this, nature beats them down. But they fly freely, supposedly, in their minds. And as long as the body is feeling a bit comfortable, they talk all this kind of nonsense. Of course, the trick of nature is that your body will feel comfortable only for a short time. So this is the tragic situation of today, in which it is worse than the mode of passion. They're not confused. They've gone beyond confusion and have reversed everything, accepting irreligion to be religion, and religion to be irreligion. Dharma means that which is enunciated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They say Dharma is what every living entity makes. It is impossible for a living entity to make Dharma. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. This is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. The path of Dharma, of real spiritual science, is directly enunciated by the Lord Himself. The part and parcel of tiny living entities cannot make up a spiritual system. That must come from the complete whole, the Om Purna. Only Krishna knows everything and is everywhere. Therefore, Krishna knows what is best for all parts and parcels, because they're all His. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivamsho Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. The living entities, they are mine. They're my parts. Mama Eva Amsha. They're certainly my Amshas, my parts. But they're caught in the illusory material atmosphere, Prakriti Sthani Karshati, and they're struggling. But they're mine. Because Krishna's energies are everywhere. Every energy belongs to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is in touch with everything and everyone. Only Krishna is qualified to lay down Dharma. That is a very fundamental understanding of Krishna consciousness. But people hate that, you know? Who is this God laying down a trip on me? I am God. I will lay a trip on everybody else. That's basically what they're saying. Who is this Krishna? Every time he opened the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. It's about me. I've got my opinions. I've got my ways. It's about me. The problem with you Hare Krishnas is that you're not taught how to value your own idiosyncrasies, how to meditate on your own uniquenesses. No. You're simply taught to focus on Krishna's qualities. What about your own qualities? Get into yourself. Get into your own special characteristics. This is the contamination of the day. And it affects even those who are trying to serve Krishna, trying to be candidates for devotional service. You've got two things going on today. You've got, actually three things. You've got the accepting of irreligion as religion. In other words, the accepting of ignorance as knowledge. And then you've got the men's brain so weak from sex life. Of course, yes, illicit sex life weakens everybody. You can particularly see the effects on the men in that the men have no fortitude, no vigor, no clarity these days. Their brains are so ruined by overabsorption in females that actually the females are stronger. The men are so spineless. They can't take care of themselves, can't take care of anybody else. Their minds are all over the place. They've got no determination, no pinpoint ability to concentrate themselves. All this is because of illicit sex life. And they think it's a great luxury to just be constantly absorbed in meditating on sex life. That's the greatest thing. And then, no one wants to take any instruction. No one wants to submit. Although the very material nature that they're embracing so tightly will force them to submit to so many miseries. Each person has his own knowledge, and that's looked at as being very nice. What do you think? What's your system? What's your spiritual understanding? And then when they hear Bhagavad Gita, it's just too strict, too firm. It doesn't leave any room for us to create and concoct. In spite of all this degradation, we go on presenting the science of the Absolute Truth. Because Krishna is all attractive, and Krishna's message is all attractive. And some people, certainly, they'll want to come out of ignorance if they just get a chance to hear. As book distributors, you're giving people a chance to hear. Especially when you go door to door. You're trying to engage them. Not only in giving their Lakshmi, but you're also trying to engage them in understanding the importance of hearing from Krishna, hearing the Supreme Absolute Truth, hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And when you get a chance, you should let people know that. If they can just hear from the right source, hear these books. Just by hearing these books, the pollutions in their heart disappear. The confusion dissipates, just like the fog dissipates when the sun rises. These books are their link to sanity, knowledge, clarity. We should let them know that. Narada has just arrived, and Vyasadeva is getting up respectfully, because Narada is the representative of Vyas. Excuse me. Narada is the representative of Brahma. Brahma is known as the original scholar, the original transcendental professor, Adi Kavi. And how was he enlightened? He was enlightened directly by the Lord in his heart. That is stated in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Tene Brahma Hidaya Adi Kaviye. The Adi Kavi, Lord Brahma, was enlightened by Krishna through the heart. And Brahma passed that understanding on to Narada, and now Narada will pass it to Vyas. One may think, what's so special about this passing on of knowledge? Actually, it is very special. Because simply to pass the message on as it is, that is the real qualification of a spiritual teacher. Prabhupada so many times gave the example about a postman. What is the perfection of the postman? Very simple. You just can't get this in our heads. The perfection of the postman is that he delivers the message, delivers the mail, without tampering it. How do you know you've got a good postman? Look for the mail. Is the mail coming as it should be? That is the qualification. To deliver the mail. To deliver the letters. Untampered. Not adding anything. Not subtracting anything. To teach the science of Krishna. Krishna Tattva. So Prabhupada has given us so many books. We can read, we can understand what the mail is, what the mail should be. And the appearance of Srila Prabhupada's books in someone's home is just like the appearance of Sri Narada. Srila Prabhupada commented that even if they just don't read those books, but the books just stay in their house, it's like having the deity in their home. So where are we to question that? And there will be a time, he said, when they will read the books. Don't worry, material nature will help out the book distribution. By beating on the heads of these rascals, then they'll turn to the books. Maybe before, maybe not till later, but they will turn to them. We just have to do our part and stop trying to speculate about, you know, well, what value will my little efforts have. We're just trying to assist. By distributing Prabhupada's books, we're assisting him in his preaching. Vyasadeva is respecting Narada because Narada is a bona fide postman. Peon. They use that word in India mostly, not so much in the West. Peon means just like a servant who carries something from one place to another. So, that's what Narada is doing. That's what Vyasadeva is doing. Passing letters on. Now, in our, due to our contamination, we think, oh, what's the big deal about just repeating something as it is? But, you see, when you're in Maya, you don't want to present Krishna consciousness as it is because it conflicts with your sense gratification. That's why sometimes you can hear devotees, they kind of try to shape the philosophy this way and that way when they get into sense gratification because they don't want to make it seem so bad. Well, you know, this is just one of the stages you have to go through. That's another phase. It's Varnashram Dharma. My sense gratification is Varnashram Dharma. They come with all these kind of excuses. Not that we have anything against Varnashram Dharma, of course. But what we're talking about is our habitual tendency to hide the truth about our base qualities, our Kali Yuga qualities. We like to hide behind so many facades. That is the problem. To repeat Krishna's message as it is takes great dedication, great determination. And because it's such a special thing, therefore the postman receives veneration for doing that job of delivering the mail through any kind of season. Like in New York, on the Central Post Office, they have this inscription. Neither rain, nor snow, nor sleet, or hail will keep the postman from his prescribed rounds. So, a Krishna conscious postman is like that. No conditions will stop a Krishna conscious teacher from passing on the mail. The people may like it, they may not like it, but we go on delivering the mail from Krishna. Certainly, it is true that in time they will like it. We are in the middle of a very auspicious situation, narrowing when he has just arrived. Vyasadeva has got up, respectfully, knowing the solution to my problems is here. Why does Vyasadeva look to Narada as the solution to his problems? Because Narada is bringing the message of Krishna. We don't have a personality cult. No. We glorify the postman because he brings the mail, not because he's just a postman without mail. That's a personality cult. What is the purpose of a postman? To deliver the mail. For that reason, the postman is glorified. But as soon as you start thinking of the postman without the mail, then you've missed the point completely. Vyasadeva is certain his problems are going to be solved. Just like when you go to a good doctor, you're certain that you'll be cured. The cure is nothing that Narada has made up. The cure is Krishna, coming from Krishna, and it is described in the authorized scriptures. What more could we want? Sometimes it's amazing when we think the different ways we can try to reject Srimad Bhagavatam. The main thing I notice is we don't reject it. We just kind of put it on the shelf and try to get on with the main business of our sense gratification. I don't reject it. It's there on the shelf. But if you read Prabhupada's books every day, you have to face the facts. Therefore, reading his books every day is a very good vaccination. And the more you try to interest others in Prabhupada's books, the more you'll be able to relish Prabhupada's books, understand them. Just as Vyasadeva got up upon the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, that same reaction people will get when you introduce these books into their home. You're introducing Narada Muni. You're introducing Krishna. You're introducing Srila Prabhupada into their house. In time, they will realize the value. So any questions?
Mm-hmm. He sort of was talking to him and he's scuffling around behind the door and he called shouts. Mm-hmm. And he pulled out this Krishna book. And they showed me, he got it maybe about 10 years ago, and he said, I read up to, sort of Mark Reed, read up to what happened if he got cancer. And as soon as he got cancer, he started reading the book, and then it got cured. So that's where he stopped reading.
Stopped reading?
Yeah.
When he got cured. Yeah, and Krishna knows the conditioned souls have this mentality. Therefore, Krishna mercifully allows the living entities to go through so many trials and tribulations because he knows. Unless they feel some pressure of misery, they won't come to me. That's why it's so dangerous on the heavenly planets. Sometimes the demigods complain. Let us be born on earth. Then we can become Krishna conscious in one short lifetime. But up here in the heavenly planets, just the sense gratification is so intense. We want to be born on earth. Then, with a short human form of life, we can go back to God. But on the heavenly planets, everything is so nice. Sense gratification far beyond what an earthling could figure out. Think of far beyond that. You've heard in the Bhagavatam the description of the Shaima women. On the heavenly planets. Women with mammary glands that are cooling in the summer and warming in the winter. This is called the Shaima women. You want, you can go to those heavenly planets. Spend a lifetime with the Shaima women. There's actually no winter there like we know it, but you know, just all the seasons, the seasonal changes just bring about different varieties of pleasurable conditions. It's not like we know. There's no physical material miseries there. Although there is old age and death, but physical miseries are far reduced from what we can conceive of. Now, Krishna knows that we're rascals. Unless we see how... what's the matter? You can just leave it, Bhakta Vatsala. There's an answering machine there too, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that phone has an answering machine on it. So, when, what is that expression Prabhupada would always quote from World War II? He said, World War I or World War II, they had an expression, in the foxholes, there are no atheists. When you're a soldier on the front line and the shells are flying over you and you're crouched down in your foxhole, you know, then, you know, oh God, please save me, oh God. Then as soon as the war is over, then back to your sensitivity. Because people are so stupid. Therefore, Krishna mercifully sends them miseries. That's why another meaning of Maya is mercy, not simply illusion. So we don't want to be like that. We don't want to be fair weather devotees. We want to be all weather devotees. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. Is old age
in the universe? It's not all throughout the universe that's there. But it's not like we know it. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punarvishnarajana. From the highest planet in the universe down to the lowest. All the places of misery where repeated birth and death takes place. It may not be old age like you know, but still there's old age and death. Swans, because with so many cows together, they won't fight. So many swans together, they'll live together quite peacefully, without friction. But human beings, the advanced species, they cannot live together, whether in families or in societies, without tearing at each other's throats. In this way, we can see that human beings are less than animals. What do people today call peace? They think peace means no hostility, no fighting. No fighting in the home, no fighting in the streets, no fighting in the countryside, no world war. That is peace, the cessation of hostilities, physical hostility. This kind of peace is attainable even amongst some animal species, like cows and swans. The human form of life is not meant for that kind of peace that's available to the animals. The human form of life is available to the development of spiritual peace. And what is spiritual peace? Does it mean simply to become inactive like a stone? No. Spiritual peace means when you have no other desire except the desire to please Krishna. What does it say in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataiva Santa Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakali Asanta. You can divide human beings into certain categories. Civilized human beings. You don't have civilized human beings today. There are the bhuktis, those who want material enjoyment. At least they're doing it according to Vedic rules and regulations. Then you have the muktis, those who want liberation into the impersonal Brahman. They want to so-called merge. And then the siddhis, those who want mystic yoga perfection. Chaitanya Charitamrita says none of them can get peace. Sakali Ashanta. They're all Ashanta, non-peaceful, because they have some desire separate from Krishna. They're agitated by some desire separate than what Krishna wants. Therefore, it cannot be peace. If the part has a separate desire from the whole, then there's disturbance. But don't think that because the part is being rebellious and has a separatist desire, that therefore Krishna, because he's a whole, because Krishna contains the part, don't think that Krishna is disturbed. No. Krishna is everything, then again he's independent from everything. This is the secret of the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Everything is within Krishna. Then again, Krishna is different from everything. That's why you just can't run around worshipping everything and say you're worshipping Krishna. That is pantheism. Everything is God. The rocks, the mountains, this, that's all God. Everything is Krishna in that everything is Krishna's energy. But still, Krishna is independent. Therefore, the Brahma Samhita states, Goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhutam. Govindamadi purusham tamahamajami. The Lord is situated in his own personal abode, Goloka, and his energies permeate everywhere. And it is not that when the Lord comes to this world, it is not that Goloka is empty. No one's home. That is not how Krishna manifests his opulence. Krishna is present everywhere, but especially he's there in his personal abode. He's not like a normal person. He's one place, he can't be the other place. Not at all. Just like in Dwarka, Narada Muni observed the Lord in his 16,108 palaces, because the Lord had 16,108 wives. But it is not that each wife had to wait 16,108 nights to be with Krishna. No. Each wife, each queen of Dwarka, had her own Krishna, her own palace. So Narada made a tour. He was investigating the opulences of Krishna. He went from palace to palace and saw Krishna doing all different kinds of things. Not that Krishna was doing the same thing in each palace. They were just 16,108 projections, all doing the same thing. No. 16,108 Supreme Personalities of Godhead, expansions, doing all different things. And then when it was time to go to the assembly house, the Sudama assembly house, the special assembly house given by the demigods, whoever would gather within that assembly house in Dwarka would not feel the threefold miseries. So, when the Lord went to the assembly house, because, you know, Kshatriyas, administrators, they have to see to the affairs of the kingdom. So, when he walked out of the palace to the assembly house, all the 16,108 expansions came back into one Krishna. So, Narada Muni was watching this. Amazement. Everything is Krishna, but then again, Krishna is different. Even though you may have a very disturbing, agitated attitude, doesn't mean Krishna is disturbed and agitated. Things are simultaneously one and different. You cannot corrupt the integrity of the Lord. You might say, well, I'm part of the whole. Therefore, if the part is malfunctioning, the whole is also malfunctioning. No. Just like if you have something broken in your car engine, then you say the car is broken. The whole car is affected just because one small part is wrong. Now, Krishna is not like that. The part may be rebellious and contaminated, but Krishna is eternally free from contamination. Very important point to understand. So what is real peace? Real peace is not simply inactivity. Peace means I simply accept Krishna's desire. Therefore, only the Krishna Bhakta is peaceful. Krishna Bhakta Nishkam. Because he's Nishkam. He has no lust. Lust doesn't simply mean physical carnality. It means wanting to be the controller and enjoyer. The Krishna Bhakta doesn't have these desires. Krishna Bhakta Nishkam. Ataiva Shanta. Therefore, he's peaceful. Whereas Bhukti Mukti Siddhikam and Sakalya Shanta. The enjoyers, the liberationists, the mystic yogis cannot be peaceful. They're agitated, even by a subtle desire. I want to be the enjoyer, even subtly. I want to be the controller. Devotional service offers real peace. We're not interested in becoming inert stones. Devotional service, bhakti, means dynamic activity of peacefulness. That is why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita on the battle of Kurukshetra, the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You can't conceive of a more active place than a military battlefield. But that is where Krishna enunciated the peace formula. Arjuna was the most peaceful by the time Bhagavad Gita concluded. In the beginning, Arjuna thought peace, to be peaceful, means not to fight this war against friends, relatives, teachers. At the end, Arjuna knew, to be a peaceful man, to win the Nobel Peace Prize, I shall fight this war. Because it's what Krishna wants. Therefore, it's a supreme peace. It seems like it's hostile. It seems like I'm making violence. But no. I am very peaceful when I 100% carry out Krishna's desire. And if I think that by not fighting the war, I'll be peaceful. No. That is not so. Then I'll be very violent. I will not be living in accordance with the Lord's will. And of course, as Krishna told Arjuna, if you think that by not fighting on my command, that will be the end of matters, you're wrong. You'll be forced to fight anyway by the three modes of material nature. So you may recall, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna had Krishna drive his chariot in between the two armies. Senyo Ubayo Maje, Ratam Stapa and Achyuta. Achyuta, infallible one. Drive my chariot, please, in between the two armies. And then Arjuna got in the middle, in between the two armies, and he saw all varieties of relatives, friends, teachers, seniors. And he became overwhelmed by the bodily conception. Krishna smiled. Prabhupada explained that Krishna was smiling, thinking, just see how powerful my illusory energy is. Even my friend Arjuna has become bewildered. Of course, it was all by the will of the Lord, but still Krishna was smiling. Just see how powerful my illusory energy is. Arjuna's right here with me, my dear associate, and now he's bewildered. And here you see Narada Muni, the representative of Godhead. He's also smiling, looking at Vyasa's predicament. Narada knows well what the problem is. He understands. Vyasadeva has not properly engaged in devotional service. That is all of our problem. Sometimes devotees think that. Well, you're just oversimplifying. No matter what I say, what I do, you say it's because I'm not executing devotional service properly. That's not that simple. So many things you have to take into account. So many factors. Now, peace of mind, peace of character, peace of living only comes through proper engagement in devotional service. Narada knew that. Therefore he was smiling. Now what's Vyasadeva going to do? Argue with him? Why are you always simplifying, talking about devotional service? Life's got so many other complications. No. Vyasadeva will listen. This is a great example for us, that whatever situation comes up in our life, we should always look and examine what is our service attitude, how is the execution of our service going, and we will find the solution in that. But Maya teaches you to look away from that. Don't be simple, don't be a fanatic, you're not a new bhakti anymore. You can appreciate that there's so many complexities other than just devotional service. Ain't devotional service. What's the big deal? I do service. Now, when you read Nectar of Devotion, which is the summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you see how precious devotional service is. How much care Rupa Goswami takes in explaining how to do devotional service. But we just take it for granted. Yeah, I do my service for today. You got any more service for me? I hope not. Well, I don't particularly like this service. Devotional service has to be done according to my terms. I'm an older devotee. It has to be done according to my terms. That's what it means to be an older devotee. Don't you look forward to that day when devotional service will be done according to your terms? I'll tell you something. It never comes. That day never comes. So give up looking for it. It never happens. In fact, by its very definition, devotional service means service according to how the person served has expectations. You're meeting the expectations of the master. Not meeting our expectations. We're not the master. How can the servant perform service to meet his own expectations? He performs service to meet the expectations of the master, Hrishikesh, the lord of the senses. So this is a good theme for us to meditate on. Narada Muni smiling at Vyasadeva's depression, or despondency, shall we say. Disappointment. So you haven't engaged enough in devotional service. Narada is called here, Devarshi, the great sage amongst the demigods. He carries a veena, his transcendental musical instrument. As you all know, the song, Narada Muni Bhajai Veena, Radhika Ramana Naomi. He strums his veena and chants Hare Krishna, and the names of the Lord, Radhika Ramana, Radhika Ramana, Krishna, the companion of Radharani. In Dwarka, Krishna is known as Rukmini Ramana, the companion of Rukmini. We like music, but we have no idea what spiritual music is and the spiritual sounds like. Yes, we do have some idea, certainly, through this kirtan, glorification of Krishna. That definitely is the presence of the spiritual realm. So many sounds are there which are inconceivable to our materially habituated ears. Sometimes devotees have a hard time giving up their attraction for material music. Fact is, the music that you hear on this planet cannot compare to that which is on the higher planets, Gandharva Loka. The Gandharvas, they're expert musicians. You notice in Krishna's pastimes, whenever Krishna does something extraordinary, which means at every moment, the demigods shower flowers and playing musical instruments. So, the Gandharvas particularly are very expert musicians. Very expert music and dance. We have no comprehension of the quality of their music, musical expression, culture. And yet, that's still within the material realm. And what to speak of the spiritual world. The gopis, Krishna's dear most devotees, they are qualified perfectly in the musical arts to please Krishna. Narada Muni does not play material music. Whatever experiences we have in this material world, we should know that they are very perverted, diluted representations of reality. Even the music of this world is very trashy and garbagey compared to the higher planet, and there's no comparison to spiritual music. Narada Muni has arrived. He's the sage amongst the demigods. And who is he talking to? Vyasadeva, who is the rishi amongst the brahmanas. You have the rishi amongst the demigods and the rishi amongst the brahmanas. Therefore, their conversation is extraordinarily significant. The Bhagavatam doesn't present you conversations between two fools. No, it gives you the most high-caliber persons and their conversations. Therefore, there is great benefit. Therefore, real civilization can occur when this conversation is placed at the center of human society. And that's what you're trying to do by circulating these books. You're trying to put Krishna in the center of society, put Krishna's exalted devotees in the center, put this conversation in the center. And you can present it to people like that. The Bhagavatam is a multi-volume spiritual encyclopedia containing conversations enclosed within other conversations. Dialogue, everyone likes dialogue. So the Bhagavatam is the dialogue, the perfect book of dialogue, the supreme dialogue book. Conversations. Conversations about enlightenment. Give and take. between the most high caliber living entities contained in the universe. Not the whole universe. A lot of the time has the most high quality living entities speaking. Not just humans. Residents of the celestial planets. Why strain so hard trying to channel? Just open up the Bhagavatam and you're in touch with these most extraordinary living entities. Let us remember this point. Narada is smiling. Krishna was smiling in the beginning of our of Bhagavad Gita, smiling about Arjuna's predicament. Narada is smiling about Vyasa's predicament. You can easily smile when you know that the truth is always engage in devotional service, tivrena bhakti yogena. Engage with great intensity in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God. Any questions? Yes.
You're saying that you write about mad expectations for Krishna's patience and not our own. So, do we have any expectations? Do we have any expectations?
Yes. We expect to be qualified to give pleasure to Krishna. Yes. And we expect to become qualified to give pleasure to Krishna. If you study Srimad Bhagavatam very exhaustively, you can expect that you'll be able to present Bhagavatam to others. If you don't expect it. You got a free moment, you just gab and fritter your time away, then that same time cannot be applied to Bhagavatam. The people buy the books when they feel your enthusiasm about the books.
In that position of self-realization, by practice of knowledge and renunciation in devotional service, one sees everything in the right perspective. He becomes indifferent to material existence, and the material influence acts less powerfully upon him. Purport. As the contamination of the germs of a particular disease can influence a weaker person, similarly, the influence of material nature or